You have heart pain, you go to the doctor. You have a pain in your soul, and for some reason going to a professional for help seems so much more difficult. Laurie Gottlieb is an author, a psychotherapist, and writes the Atlantic's weekly Dear Therapist advice column. She gets it. When she had difficulty coping with an unexpected breakup, she moved out of the therapist's chair and into the patient's couch. And switching sides has reminded her about the power of talking and connection. Her new book is called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. A therapist, her therapist, and our lives revealed. Hi, Laurie.
Hi there.
Why is it so hard to ask for mental health help?
You know, I think it's hard because I think that a lot of people still feel a stigma around talking to someone about their emotional lives. I think that when something feels off with our bodies, we go to the doctor, but when something feels off emotionally, often we feel like, well, it's not that bad, or I'm embarrassed, or nobody else is experiencing this, or something's wrong with me, and so we just kind of ignore it.
And in New Zealand in particular, I think we have this sort of she'll be right attitude, putting head down and getting on with it. There's a sense that maybe my problems aren't big enough to go to therapy for. So what's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, you know, I say in the book that there's no hierarchy of pain, that pain is pain. I think we tend to feel like we have to be in a full-blown crisis. You know, someone has to have died. Something very traumatic has to have happened. And the thing is that the quality of our emotional lives affects the quality of our lives every single day. And it's to people's peril if they feel like, well, they have to wait until something, you know, really difficult happens. There's no shame in going to talk about your life, your problems, things you're struggling with. And I think that what people get most out of therapy, in fact, is when they realize they come to learn about what patterns they have. You know, what are their blind spots and what are the ways that they self-sabotage or what are the ways that they keep ending up in the same unfortunate situation over and over. That's the magic of what therapy does. And I feel like people associate therapy instead with, you know, something really catastrophic happening. And that's not what most people are doing in therapy.
And you write, it's not as if we're going to peer in those darker corners, flip on the light and find a bunch of cockroaches. Fireflies love the dark too. There's beauty in those places, but we have to look in there to see it. So can you explain that? How can there be beauty in the dark places?
I think it's through our struggles that we become, you know, we move on and we grow and we change. And I think that people learn a lot about themselves when they get through a struggle. I think they learn to navigate their lives differently. And I think they become much stronger and more resilient. And I think they become richer as people for having gone through something that maybe they wouldn't have chosen to go through, but it changes what they can do in the future. It opens up the possibilities for them in ways that they didn't even know were available to them.
You also write that, I love this, insight is the booby prize of therapy. So does that mean the heavy lifting really begins once you gain some insights about yourself and then have to use them?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of people will come to therapy and they'll say, oh, now I understand why I do that. Now I understand why I keep getting into this argument with my spouse, right? Now I understand why I'm having difficulty in this relationship or that relationship or in this job or whatever it is. And then they come back the next week and I say, well, did you do something different when you got into that argument? Well, no, but I understand why I do it now. You know, that's not very helpful. You have to be both vulnerable and accountable when you come to therapy, that you have to be vulnerable to be able to look at yourself in a way that maybe you haven't been willing to, but you also have to be accountable. You have to make changes. It's not enough to say, I understand something about myself. You also have to say, well, now what? And what do I do with this understanding? What tangible changes can I make out in the world knowing what I know now?
I had a friend with a broken heart, and I said to them, maybe you should think about getting some therapy. And they went along to one session, and I said, how did it go? And they said, well, it didn't work. I still feel sad. And I wonder, do people expect too much Do they expect instant relief from whatever they're troubled by?
That's one of the reasons I wanted to write Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, because I wanted to bring people into the therapy room so they could see what it actually is and also what it isn't. I think there are so many misconceptions about what therapy is, one of which is that, you know, it's supposed to make you feel better right away. And what people don't know is that there's work involved. You're going to have to do some work, but that there will be great benefits to doing that work. And I think some of the other misconceptions are just that you're going to go there and you're going to talk about your problems every week and the therapist is just going to listen to you, but they're not. They're actually going to, it's a very active conversation that they're going to have with you.
You say in the book that the work you do with people is like physical therapy. How so?
It's like physical therapy because you have to keep going and you have to work those muscles, and sometimes it's uncomfortable, like physical therapy can be, but you come out so much stronger in the end.
If it doesn't hurt a little, does that mean it's not working?
You know, it's not that therapy has to hurt. It's that it might make you feel different, you know, access different feelings that you normally don't. And so I think a lot of people feel like, well, they'd rather be numb than feel pain. And the thing is, numbness isn't the absence of feelings. Numbness is actually being overwhelmed by too many feelings, and eventually those feelings will surface. So what you do in therapy is you're going to feel a lot of feelings that maybe you have avoided feeling, but that's going to help you to see something. I always say to people, don't be afraid of those feelings. So follow your envy, for example. It tells you what you want. Follow your sadness. It tells you what's not working. Follow your anxiety. It tells you how you can change, because it will help you to see what is causing that anxiety. If you just ignore your feelings, you're like going around your life without a compass. You don't know where to turn.
I'm speaking to Laurie Gottlieb, by the way. She's my guest today, and she's a therapist, and her new book is called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. You've said that it's important that a patient is authentic and vulnerable. Do you ever get the sense someone is not telling you a true story?
Oh, all the time. And it's not because people are lying, it's that people tell their stories in a particular way, depending on what they leave in, what they leave out, what they emphasize. Often people bring in a story that they want you to agree with. They want you to validate their story. And that's not always helpful, because what you want to do is you want to say, I want you to look at this story from a broader perspective. I just did a TED Talk about this, where I'm talking about the ways that people tell their stories and how sometimes we come in with these faulty narratives. And, you know, the faulty narrative might be about someone in our lives, like this person is causing this problem for me. It might be about ourselves, like I'm unlovable or I can't trust anyone. And what we do in therapy is we help to rewrite those faulty narratives. So people aren't necessarily lying, but often they're leaving out big chunks of the story that would be really helpful for me to know.
You've got the stories of four patients that you've treated in your book. Do you see common themes in their stories? Do the same issues come up over and over again in your practice?
Oh, absolutely. The reason that I chose those four patients was because they look so different on the surface in terms of age, gender, personality, you know, history, all of that. And I'm the fifth patient in the book. So, you know, all five of us, because I go to my own therapist, so all five of us look very different. But what I hope people get from the book is that we're all more the same than we are different, that we all, at our core, have universal struggles about how can I love and be loved? You know, what can I change and what can't I change? How do I deal with grief? And I don't just mean death, but the loss that we experience as we go through life. We all have those struggles, and I think that sometimes we forget how common our problems are.
What could a therapist possibly get out of seeing a therapist? Don't you just sit there and think, oh, I see what you're doing. No, I'm not going to fall for that trick.
Well, we're not trying to trick you. I think that's the main thing to remember, is that there are no tricks.
Right.
And I think what we get out of it is that, you know, we're just people in the world, too. I say at the beginning of the book that my greatest credential is that I'm a card-carrying member of the human race. That the fact that it's my humanity that helps me to help other people. And so, of course, like any other person in the world, I encounter struggle. And that's, you know, and a therapist can help me work through my struggle so that I'm a better therapist for my patients.
And the catalyst for you was the breakup of an engagement. How did talking to someone change? Did it change your view of what had happened in the relationship, or maybe was it more about changing your view of yourself?
Right. Well, I think what's interesting is that the problem that people come in with is usually, you know, one version of something deeper that maybe they have to deal with. I always say that I'm listening for the music under the lyrics. The lyrics are, my boyfriend just broke up with me, and because he doesn't want to be with a kid, my kid, you know, for the next 10 years, which is what happened in the book. And
write about very heartbreakingly, by the way. I think anyone who's been in a long-term relationship will know that's that picture that you paint. Well done for that.
Right. Yeah, no, it was heartbreaking. And what I wanted was the therapist to kind of agree with me that clearly, you know, something was wrong with my boyfriend for doing this. And of course, all my friends, you know, couldn't, you know, gave me exactly what I wanted, which was, you know, you dodged a bullet, he's a loser, all those things. But my therapist didn't do that, which was good. Your friends give you what's called idiot compassion, which is they go along with your story. And the therapist will give you wise compassion, which is to say, I think there might be something else going on here. How could you not have known this the whole time you were dating him? And sometimes we don't, but there was more to this story, and I wasn't just coming in for the boyfriend issue, as it turns out. So I think that that's really important to remember that, you know, the lyrics might have been there was this breakup, but the music was what was the underlying struggle or pattern that got me into this situation in the first place? And that's what the therapy was about.
And if you have got the courage to go to therapy and write about it, to be honest, that might affect your livelihood, right? Being this vulnerable and honest with your audience, I guess that's a pretty good endorsement for therapy's power.
Yeah, I didn't know how people would react to my being so vulnerable in the book, but I felt like if my patients were going to be that vulnerable, of course I've changed, you know, they're not identifiable because I've changed their names and any details that would identify them, but if I was going to write about how vulnerable they were with me, I felt like it would be fraudulent for me to kind of clean myself up, you know, in the writing of my story, that I had to be as raw, as vulnerable, as open, as flawed as they were, in order to show what I'm trying to show, which is that, you know, we're all going through this together.
Has it made you a better therapist going through that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the process of going to therapy has made me a better therapist because I learned a lot from the therapist that I was going to in terms of just being yourself in the room. And I don't mean talking about yourself or not having boundaries, but I mean bringing your humanity into the room in a way that I think a lot of therapists, when they're training, they're trained in a very formal way. And this really, I think, changed the way that I practice.
Not everyone can afford to go to a therapist, and you write in the book about something we can all get better at to help our friends and family who may need some emotional support. You've already told us about idiot compassion, but what is wise compassion?
I think wise compassion is when you can be what I call delivering compassionate truth bombs, which is being honest with people in a way that they can, where they don't feel shame, where they don't feel judged or criticized. And I think there's a real skill to that. And I think that a lot of us don't have that skill because we either, you know, have always sort of glossed over the truth or we just avoid it entirely. I hope that in the book, when people see through the dialogue in the book, you know, how that's done, that they can take that into their own lives and do that with the people that they care about.
And so we're approaching the holidays, and you've got advice in your Dear Therapist column in The Atlantic this week about coping with family members who show signs of depression over the Christmas holidays. What would you like people to remember the most as we spend more time together?
I think it's really hard when somebody in the family is struggling, and I think that we need to have compassion for them and understand that maybe our way of dealing with it isn't necessarily what they need, and to be open to listening and asking them, you know, how can I help? What is it that would help you? How can we make this holiday season go smoothly? And to really listen to what they say. I think so many times we don't ask, and then we give help that's not helpful, and then we feel resentful because we feel like the person didn't appreciate our help. And so I think just being really curious about that will take a lot of the stress out of those holiday gatherings.
How has your Dear Therapist column changed, or how's the job changed since you first started doing it?
I I don't know that the job has changed, but it's certainly different from what I do in the therapy room, because in therapy I get to ask follow-up questions and I get to see the person the next week if I forgot to say something or I decide that I'll take another tack. With the column, you get one letter, and again, you know that it's told from this person's one perspective, and so you really have to be creative in terms of trying to get them to see something through one response that I could do in several sessions in the therapy room.
The other thing you talk about, which I think is really interesting, is the humanity of therapists. You tell a couple of interesting stories. One person happened to be in a bar when they saw their therapist crying. I think that was the story. There was more of a backstory, and they said, "Well, I'm not going to ever see her again. She hasn't got her own stuff together." That's the wrong reaction, right?
Yeah, so this was a colleague of mine, and she and her husband had been trying to have a baby, and she was finally pregnant, and she got a call while standing in a Starbucks from her doctor saying that the pregnancy wasn't viable, and she started crying, and her patient happened to walk in at that moment, saw the therapist crying, and never came back. And so I think on the one hand, our humanity is what helps us to help people. But people don't want to see our humanity. You know, it's almost like when you're a child and you see your teacher out in the world and, you know, you're like, "Mrs. Jones, what are you doing here?" And, you know, it's I think, discombobulating. Yeah. And I think that people also expect that their therapists don't have any struggles. And that's just not true. And so I hope that this book humanizes everybody, the therapists, the patients, our families, our friends, everybody that we interact with on a daily basis.
In fact, if you found a therapist who was just an advice-giving robot, that would be more of a concern, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we want you to be able to learn to trust yourself to make good decisions. And also, you know, as we all sometimes make decisions that we would like to change or we wouldn't make again, you know, how do we grow and learn from those? If every time you wanted to make a decision, you had to ask your therapist, well, we would not be serving you very well.
Hey, the exciting news is your book is going to be a TV series. What can you tell us about that?
It is going to be a TV series with Eva Longoria's company is adapting it, and the creators of the show The Americans are writing the first episode.
Amazing. You must be really excited.
Yes. And one of the things I really hope to do is to make sure that we portray therapists as just normal people. I think there are two tropes of therapists in the media, and one is sort of the brick wall, the person who doesn't say anything, and the other one is like the train wreck, the person who, you know, has all kinds of problems and can't handle their own personal life. And I think that, you know, we're just normal people who have struggles, but who, you know, who are very relatable. And I hope that's what the TV show does as well as the book.
Great. Well, congratulations on the book. It's a fascinating read, and there's something in there for everyone. It's called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. And therapist Laurie Gottlieb, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for the conversation.